Welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. This is the show where we dive into all aspects of peak performance through the lifespan. At TLA, we believe that everyone is, can, and should be an athlete for life. We celebrate athletes of every age, type, and ability level. Our mission is to help you to become and remain hard to kill on the playing field and in the game of life. Join me, your host, John Zombro, and my amazing co-hosts and guests as we discuss the coaching, training, and lifestyle applications that we use at TLA to help you resolve chronic pain problems forever, optimize your health and body composition, and smash athletic and fitness goals. If you're a competitive recreational athlete, a serious fitness enthusiast, or someone who wants to be a member of this inclusive community, you've come to the right place. Thanks for joining me today. And let's get started kicking ass at, in, and for life. Hello, John here, and thank you for being with me today. This is episode number 280, and yet another edition in the Animal Fit series. Today, we're talking about muscles yet again, and this is probably going to be, part two of three in this really deep topic of muscle physiology and muscle biomechanics and really gaining that deep and effective understanding of what kind of muscles do you have and how do you best train them and how do you leverage that for optimal performance through your entire lifespan as well as incredible and amazing health. Sounds good. Sounds good to me. That's what I'm after every day, and that's what I try to help my clients do, and also this community and audience. I do appreciate you so much. I often think to myself, what is it that I'm doing here? What's going on? And it's really important, I think, for all of us to do that every once in a while. Take an inventory, work on a business plan, so forth and so on, personal, professional development, so valuable. And I, as I've kind of pondered what's been going on here over, quite a few years, I try to ask myself these questions. Well, what exactly is the lifetime athlete? And what I've come up with is that it's really a lifestyle community. It's a gathering of people who share this common interest, one of passion for the human experience optimized. And of course, that's taking what I like to call the athletic avenue into wellness and longevity, but it's really an understanding that we all are our best version of ourselves when we look, feel, and perform our best. And certainly, it's an inclusive community that we want to encourage others to join us. And make that thing adaptable and modifiable so each person has a fit and, has a place and a way that they feel good about. And of course, that's what we're talking about in Animal Fit in particular. But, I ask myself these questions. What exactly does the Lifetime Athlete offer for anyone? Or what are we selling? And I think it comes down to this. Bear with me when I say this. The promise of vitality. I thought about robustness. That's a word I like to use as well. Durable, versatile, all those things. But I think vitality says it all, because the person who is that vital individual, that vital organism, that's who you want to be. It's who you want to be around with. And everyone deserves to be that person. And I started asking myself, like in any organization or any business, what problem does TLA solve? And that got into some great reflection for me. And I said, it solves the problem of less than optimal quality of life. So if a person has pain or poor health, or their body comp's not where they want, or their performance just isn't what they want, that's really what we do here, is we help people get out of pain, solve chronic pain problems forever, improve health, improve body composition, improve performance. But ultimately, it just comes down to that, doing those things that you love in life and getting the most out of it and out of yourself. And so a lot of times the minutiae isn't as important as that big driver, which is quality of life. And then I said, well, how do I do that? I do it with services and products, just like any service provider or business does. And I have guidance. And so my guidance is in the form of coaching and presenting. And so when I'm coaching, I'm working with people, you know, wearing those different hats, performance coach, health educator, physical therapist, to do those things we had just talked about. Same thing with presenting, you know, whether that's working with a company, developing a really cutting edge corporate wellness culture. I love to use that term, or even just educating on certain topics. Like I'll be presenting at the Trail Days Online conference in late February. My presentation is 6 to 9, or it's during the block of the 6 to 9 p.m. on the 24th Mountain Time. Building the Backpacking Athlete, that's what I'm going to be talking about. We're doing a workshop on that and how some of the models that we use here at TLA can spill. Or not even spill, but just effectively fit athletes of that nature. And then with content, you know, that's what this is. This podcast is it's a piece of content, just like any article or video or book or online course that, you know, has come out of TLA HQ over the last number of years. And I think it's good to talk about that because it kind of helps rah-rah a little bit, but also, you know, if these are the kinds of messages that are resonating with you, then yeah, I'm glad you're here. I want you here. I want you to be here. If for any reason you're kind of like, what's this guy talking about? And no, I vehemently disagree. Well, okay. I hope that that's not the case, but you know, that's how we all have to roll. So then I think about, well, who exactly is our audience, our community, our market, our service base? And it's this. Now, first of all, I would say this community is inclusive and everybody's welcome here. And I have worked with just about everybody you can name in terms of age, type, level, ability, all the things that we said in the intro today. But I would say most of the people, or more and more of them, are this. That's a maturing individual with a passionate physical identity. And maturing is an interesting thing because, you know, we all, you know, I'm talking about young males, our prefrontal cortex begins to mature in the early to mid 20s. Certainly was true for me. But the point here would be, I don't think we have to nail that down too specifically, but if I look at a lot of my clients, I'd say they're between the ages of 40 and 70. There are a few who are pushing 80 and kicking some major A, love that. But yeah, just kind of putting that out there. And, you know, we're not trying to be like it's the guys club and we're always talking about how do you jack up your tea. Or it's a women's health specialty group. Neither of those things are kind of where I want to be. I'm about 60% male, 40% female in the groups that I work with or the people that I get the privilege and opportunity to engage with. And I want to keep it that way because I think there's really the information that we're sharing is like that. It's such that it's not exclusive, and it's very important for me to, you know, be able to do that, to provide things that are in a reasonable amount of generality, and then with an individual or a group, find ways to tweak, tune, and make it more specific, which is what we do. So I also noticed some things about people that I work with, how they find me or they come through the filters, how they trickle in. They're motivated. They're already motivated. They know what they want, and they want to get after it, and I do love that. I find that that's where I can do my best work, as opposed to trying to change someone or just give them a bit of convincing. That is hard work. It's sometimes futile. And it's also not where I want to put much energy because I have so much to do with these motivated people and we make such great gains. They're also coachable. And by coachable, I mean, you know, just kind of interested in, willing to participate in a relationship and understand the value of how that can 10x or magnify any outcome. These people are also willing to invest, and I like to clarify that because actually for most of the things that I do, we're not talking about large monetary investments at all. Values there, but not perhaps not so much in the way of cost. Well, by willing to invest, what I mean is, yeah, sure, there's a little bit of discretionary income that one wants to invest in what one does. But it's basically that time, that energy, that focus, again, driven by the passion. And when I see all these things come together, it's these people, you know, these, you know, backpackers, backcountry hunters, mountain bikers, triathletes, skiers, you know, people that their lifestyle is a big part of their identity, runners, cyclists, the list goes on. But I think you can kind of see how it is such a thrill for me to engage with these kind of people and really try to make differences in their lives, which I think that I'm doing. I can always get better and be better, but that's where I'm at. And this vision I have, I had it when I started this this TLA journey, again, quite a long time ago. I'd like this to become a recognized brand and kind of be known as that resource where performance and longevity intersect. And I think that's really important because there's a lot of science and crafting and care that goes into, first of all, helping everyone to get and stay athletic through the lifespan, doing it safely, doing it effectively, and then tweaking out those performances, which are not always easy. There's a lot of challenge in this, but then when we get those outcomes, oh, it is so magnificent and rewarding. And that's what, I want for folks. And so just thought I'd kind of share that with you guys. Thanks for letting me do it. I appreciate you for being here yet again. And because we're talking about muscle now in this Animal Fit series, what I'd like to get into is just a quick review of what we spoke about the other day. And of course, as you know, that was, we just kind of introduced concepts about muscles. Humans have muscles. We have these differing fiber types. Globally or generically, there's a fast twitch and a slow twitch. The slow twitch is type 1. The fast twitch is type 2. In humans, we have a subdivision of those fibers. There's the more common 2A and then the very explosive but somewhat rare 2X. And then research also shows that there are some hybridized fibers among those groups, which are more present in untrained individuals than trained individuals, because the hybridized fibers may represent ones which are in transition, converting to the type of fiber which that individual's training and lifestyle is requiring or demanding. And so I thought that was a pretty good way to kind of get into that. And we also need to chat very briefly about energy system utilization, and I want to get into that as long as a couple other topics for today's, I won't call it a missive, I'm going to try to keep this reasonably brief. Now, the Training Tribe, that's our online platform, group coaching and training. We're just on the verge of entering this strength training block. We're going to, work on 3 months of different types of training splits and using all sorts of methodology to have some strength and hypertrophy or muscle size gains as well for some of the group. And in doing that, I've been talking with them about some of these principles and others, and I just put out an article on the blog at The Lifetime Athlete, which I think it's really a cool topic. I'm just going to mention it right here, and that article was entitled, let's see if I can remember this off the top of my head, Muscle Fiber Types and Autonomic Nervous System States. So this is, I think it's a big almost like disconnect that we have in our society, is that there's not as much of a realization as I'd like to see. I think there is in the highest level of athletics, but in a lot of other places and in fitness, we might not be seeing the appreciation of the sympathetic nervous system in eliciting the responses from the fast twitch muscle fibers. And that's what that article talked about. I won't necessarily go through all of that, but the points are that we definitely need to be most of the time parasympathetic, but then sympathetic in brief episodic moments. And of course, that's when we want to be doing our strength, speed, and power training, because if we don't kind of like get up and get after it, we actually don't get much recruitment of those type 2 fibers, at least particularly any of the 2Xs. And those things are linked not only to athletic performance, but all of the things we know about health and longevity and fall risk and so forth and so on. And so I'm really encouraging people to find a way safely to get a little more training into their type 2 fiber system. And that's actually true for endurance athletes as well. And, you know, I'm not saying let's change the whole paradigm, endurance athletes, because that's what they want to do. They're going to be mostly slow twitch dominant, and they need to be aerobic and, you know, utilize that type of metabolic function. But nonetheless, they don't want to totally disregard the type 2s, because guess what? Use it or lose it. If we don't train those things, they atrophy. And while they can be trained back, might not be as easy as just keeping them there in the first place. And so, you know, moving in now to just, I think that's a good build up to talk about energy system utilization. There are three basic manners in which muscle fibers can metabolize fuel substrates to produce force. And I had alluded to that in the previous one, but now I want to give you the details. When we need rapid, explosive energy for just a few seconds, say 1 to possibly, on the far end, as much as 10 seconds, our muscles use the phosphocreatine or phosphagen system. This pathway rapidly produces energy in the form of ATP or adenosine triphosphate that the muscles can use for contraction for those 1 to 10 seconds. But it is depleted quickly, and then it takes up to several minutes to replenish. This system predominates with heavy lifts, explosive jumps, and quick sprints. The type 2 fibers are well equipped to take advantage of this system, and as long as the rest periods are adequate, they can repeat multiple bouts of work using this metabolic pathway. If we back effort off just a few percentage points from true maximum, but then ask the muscles to work hard for more than 10 seconds, up to perhaps several minutes. Now, recognizing that the maximum intensity we can sustain for 20 seconds is slightly greater than that which we can support for, say, 90 seconds. So it's basically how much can you do, what's the best you can do in any given time frame. That's what I'm talking about there. So I'm not saying, you know, give a 70% effort for 20 seconds. We're still saying let's go 95 plus. Well, when that happens, we use the glycolytic or anaerobic system. This process is activated when our muscles create energy. Again, there's ATP through the breakdown of glucose, if it's readily available, or glycogen, which is the stored form of muscle sugar, to produce that ATP without oxygen, thus being anaerobically. This works to supply the significant amount of energy demanded by the working muscles, but it does so at a high and ever-increasing metabolic cost. And this will be familiar to all of you at lifetime athletes. The well-recognized byproduct of anaerobic metabolism is lactic acid, which is quickly dissociated into lactate, the buffered salt form, which the body recycles through different pathways to actually be utilized as a fuel substrate or restored as glycogen yet again, and hydrogen ions, which are actually what causes that eventual and familiar burn and lockup in your beastly body. Generally, we can only sustain a fixed, but somewhat modifiable with training, amount of this anaerobic metabolism until performance drops off quite drastically. Once we undergo enough glycolytic activity to accumulate a temporarily toxic, rate-limiting load of metabolites in the system, our muscular output will go no mo. This is kind of how it works, and we all know this. Here's where things get really exciting. Specific and purposeful training, again, listing this system, can, first of all, decrease the amount of lactic acid produced at a given workload. Second, you can improve your body's tolerance to that the amount of lactate and hydrogen ions that are present. You sort of get used to it a little bit. And then thirdly, you can increase the proficiency with which those metabolites are processed or cleared. So we get some enzymatic efficiency and other things happening. And in looking at that third metabolic pathway for muscular function, we have the aerobic system. In this case, the work demand in terms of speed or force or both of the muscle is low enough that most of the energy can be produced by primarily burning fat in the presence of oxygen. There's still some carbohydrate metabolism going on, but we're going to say that. So obviously the type 1 muscle fibers have cellular machinery and enzymes which are specifically designed for this aerobic metabolic task. And you know, all fibers, however, can improve their efficiency with aerobic metabolism over time, you know, provided that training stimulus is appropriate and sufficient. And I think that's a good point, a good place to put in this point about low threshold motor units and high threshold motor units. Low threshold motor units are, you know, primarily slow twitch, and that's like, you know, if you're reaching at the table to pick something up, or maybe typing, or right now if I'm, you know, moving my mouse or something, that's a low threshold. Whereas a high threshold motor unit takes more intention and effort to get it to fire, but once it does, that's where we're accessing those type 2 fibers to get that explosive power and strength. Well, we also need to appreciate that these energy systems function like practically all things in biology. They exist almost seamlessly, probably under a bell-shaped curve, and they bleed, blend, blur into one another. So it's never like it's all one. There's always components. And that's, again, part of this brilliant human design. We're, for the most part, using all the pathways simultaneously. But under certain conditions, one will dominate. And again, that's based on effort and duration and things like that. So in summary on that, muscle fiber type is just one component in human performance, but it is an extremely important one. It's both partially fixed due to those genetics and quite dynamic. You know, kind of as you've learned with what we've gone through, both in the last section and just right now, genetics really do need to be appreciated, but we also have to recognize the profound impact that training has on muscle fiber composition. So as we kind of seamlessly flow into talking about yours and my muscle characteristics, so that's what this show is all about, exploring your personal muscle fiber physiology. I think we get a chance to talk about the animals a little bit more, which excites me so much. So muscle shape and size can be an indicator of fiber type, as well as their performance capacity. It's going to take a little bit of explaining, but I don't think it's going to be difficult. These descriptors also tend to be quite consistent with the three primary somatotypes. So if you recall from our earlier discussions, that's ectomorph, mesomorph, and endomorph. And now here we go, their corresponding animals within the animal fit kingdom, which are respectively the coyote, the panther, and the bear. Muscles are made up of many, many fibers, and each muscle, by a design that links form and function, has a somewhat unique orientation of its fibers. Take, for example, the biceps brachii, the muscle of your upper arm, the Popeye muscle that everyone's familiar with. This muscle has what is known as a fusiform shape, and that its fibers run in a relatively straight line, but the muscle is fairly round and more voluminous in the middle. That's called the muscle belly. It's tapered at each end where it connects to its tendons. And what I like to say is picture a tennis ball and a tube sock, maybe that's being stretched out a little bit from the shoulder to the elbow. It's a two-joint muscle. Well, we'll use the bicep muscle as an example as we discuss the common muscle characteristics of these three basic body types or animals. And again, you know, I'll probably kind of reinforce that as we go along through these discussions. And then eventually, you know, I'll probably just get to the point of just using the animal term because this is animal fit. Okay, coyotes or ectomorphs typically have more type 1 fibers than type 2. Their muscles tend to be long and lean. In fact, coyote muscles usually appear somewhat sinewy, in many cases with barely discernible muscle bellies. In the ectomorph, or the human version of the coyote, we'll see a bicep when it's flexed, appearing much like a rope, with a minimally expanded muscle belly in the middle, laying on top of that arm bone, or humerus. This muscle's configuration speaks to its economical nature in coyotes, as it has very little weight and it takes up minimal space, and that's an important characteristic of this beast. Now, panthers or mesomorphs generally have more, or even mostly, depending, type 2 fibers. Probably, again, more 2As than 2Xs, but let's just keep going. These cats can be very strength-oriented beasts. You think about like a tiger, for example, or highly speed dominant, you think of the cheetah. Panther muscles tend to have a somewhat bulbous shape, often with a distinctively long tendon portion. You can see these features quite clearly in many bodybuilders and sprinters, among others, particularly when you envision that biceps muscle pose, and that muscle pops out like a baseball or a softball. maybe even larger in some cases. The same goes for their calves. You know, that's a very similar muscular function in the lower extremity. This design is quite powerful, but its greatest advantage is in speed or rate of force development. You got these large, strong, you know, type 2 driven muscles, but they're relatively short because of the tendon length. So they can complete their contraction cycles very rapidly. And those are those actin-myosin relationships. Well, again, those relatively long tendons, they work, you know, essentially as like a what we would call a powerful force transference cable right to the bone. And so you get this bulbous, but maybe a little bit short relative to tendon length muscle. It contracts, bam, pulls on the tendon, and then we get force application very rapidly, particularly speed. So thus panthers, they have these fast contracting muscles and energy magnifying tendons. However, panthers tend to have also the lowest amount of type 1 fibers of all the creatures, and probably they have a more limited capacity for endurance training comparatively. This is just one reason why most of your pure sprinters really don't dig distance work. Now, finally, let's get to bears. Bears, or endomorphs, are usually dominant in type 2 fibers, but they possess a minor secondary makeup of type 1 fibers. At first, this may seem counterintuitive, but when we consider the nature of the bear and that of the endomorphic human, we must appreciate their metabolic efficiency. Bears have those highly efficient metabolisms which allow them to convert more ingested food into stored fuel as body fat, and during hibernation or simply times of low food availability, the utilization or combustion of that fuel is enhanced by the presence of some type 1 muscle fibers due to their ability to oxidize fat for fuel, or due to those fibers' ability. So this same metabolic efficiency helps bears to move their relatively high body weight at low velocities without becoming exhausted, without having to recruit those type 2 fibers, kind of like a trolling motor on a boat, fishing boat, if you kind of picture that one. Well, this advantageous property is what bears use for getting around kind of casually. You almost see this in their nature, and they can save their large displacement, high power engines, the highest. And actually on real bears, it does show that they possess a very high, relatively speaking, amount of those type 2X fibers, which makes total sense, you know. So getting back to this predominance of type 2 fibers in bears, they're naturally strong. They're the strongest beasts in the kingdom. Their muscles will tend to look very rectangular when they flex their massive biceps. It's impressive. It will appear as a brick. And while these big brick-like bear muscles don't usually reach their peak force quite as fast as those of panthers, their total force production, again, is the highest of any creature in the kingdom. So you just think of it like, and you can see this, if you want to see something create high, relatively high force, but really quickly, look at any cat. But when you think, okay, almost as quick, but not quite as quick, but even more force, that's what bears do. So now let's take a look at muscle appearance. I'm just, you know, giving us a chance to appreciate these things. And it's time for you to perform your mirror self-assessment. Remember, again, that every physique is awesome and unique, and we are celebrating it here. Just try to appreciate who you are and recognize that every beast has gifts as well as trade-offs in the animal kingdom. Stand facing the mirror and take a look at your neck. Is it a willow branch, an oak trunk, or a sequoia stump? That's a visual of a coyote, panther, bear progression. Just pick one, as close as you can get. Okay, move to the shoulders. From the outermost point of the joint, the acromion, does your deltoid muscle taper down toward the elbow in an almost straight line, like a slightly warped board? If so, that's coyote. Does it look more like a cannonball? This would be panther. Is it a brick? Hello, bear. Pleased to meet you. Okay, now clench your thigh muscles and look at your outside quadriceps, the vastus lateralis. Is it there, but a bit like a rope? That's coyote. Does it have a bulbous nature? This indicates panther. Or does it present with a slab-like appearance, like there's a 4x4 post in there? Bear for sure. At this point, turn sideways to the mirror. Flex your pecs. Their profile. Is it reasonably flat? That's a coyote. Bulging out a bit? Panther. Or even more pronounced, bear, will be telling. Stay sideways and clench your buttock. Do you see a crescent moon? That's a coyote. Half a bowling ball? You're a panther. Or a full-on cinder block? Well, there's a bear. Finally, appreciate your calves, specifically the large upper muscle known as the gastrocnemius, or gastroc for short. Looks like a small baseball bat. This is coyote. Appears more like a turkey drumstick. There's a panther. Has a thickness that starts fairly low, not too far above the ankle, and then takes on a fire hydrant image. Bear those calves with pride. Okay, so you've talked about those appearances, and there is a table. Again, you can download that, the PDF of that table, at the Animal Fit website, or it's in the book for your reference as well. Kind of goes through all those things, and you can also put those results into results table one as you're going through. Want to jump right ahead to muscle composition, and by now you're becoming an expert in muscle fiber types and their unique characteristics. When we get on to the section of neurotyping, we will also be learning a numbered system. Because of this, and in order to avoid confusion, I'd like from this point forward to just classify muscle fibers by their characteristics as opposed to their numbers. Consequently, from now on, type 1 muscle fibers will be referred to as slow twitch, or just ST. ST. I'll make sure I say that very clearly. And type 2 fibers as fast twitch, or FT. There's a table that is available in the book, and I'm going to just talk about it a little bit because it goes over some of these muscle composition characteristics. And what you can look at in the table is there's all these different categories for the fiber profile. There's how it behaves metabolically, how it utilizes energy, what's its common term, speed of contraction, how much force does it generate, how fatigue resistant is it, what's its size relatively in diameter, how much lactate it produces, how rapidly it recovers, what it appears to be. And anyway, that table has those three columns where you can look at, these are what the slow twitch muscles look like, the type ones. The blended presentation of people who have kind of a mix of, you know, that I don't want to say it's 50-50 exactly, but it, you know, it might be anywhere from 40-60 to 60-40, something like that. You know, those people are kind of representing characteristics of both ones and twos. And then people who are, let's say, representing a dominance of fast twitch fibers have some other characteristics. And so those things kind of flip-flop as you go through. But it's really easy to look at the table. So instead of trying to read it all out, I would just say, hey, even if you don't have the book, I'd love it if you had a copy of it. But you can take a look at that PDF on the website quite easily. Well, training can impact muscle fibers in multiple ways. First of all, we have a genetically predetermined number of muscles or muscle fibers in our bodies. Humans can undergo hypertrophy, which is an enlargement of existing muscle fibers, as well as that type conversion that I alluded to in the previous podcast, where a 1 can become a 2 and a 2 can become a 1, again, to some extent based on genetics. It's also possible that at least some humans can undergo muscle fiber hyperplasia, or the growing of new additional muscle fibers from stem cells. Again, this is much more common in a lot of the animal research. We're not sure how much of this can or does happen in humans. It's probably not a significant area or a significant amount. This area still requires further research to provide some definitive answers. But based on the most recent research available, it does appear that in some individuals, a combination of unique genetic factors, extensive training experience, and high tension loading, very high tension, may be attributable to this result. So regardless, any training that we do, whether it's endurance work, weightlifting, or speed training, will send a stimulus to every muscle fiber involved to do its best to adapt to that specific stressor and become better at dealing with it. This is basically the nature of training. The more we do something, the stronger the signal we are giving our muscles and even our entire bodies is to improve in that very capacity. Regarding that type conversion condition, the longer and stronger that a stimulus is present, as in consistent focused training over years, like a lifetime athlete would do, the more likely it is that one's fibers will convert to the type that matches the demand of the training. And this has been proven over and over in research. This is the specific adaptation to imposed demand, or SAID, S-A-I-D, principle that is at the root of practically all training. However, as we mentioned earlier, every person probably has a ceiling or a limit of change that can occur based on his or her personal genetics. For example, in the presence of heavy lifting or sprint training, one person may convert more slow twitch fibers to fast twitch than another. And very interestingly, research shows that it's more common for the human to convert ST to FT than FT to ST. I better say that just in case it didn't come through the microphone clearly. It's more common for the human under the proper training stimulus to convert more slow twitch fibers to fast twitch than it is for an athlete to be able to change their fast twitch fibers back to slow twitch. This may be one of the underlying reasons why pure sprinters, you know, let's say elite 100 meter runners, don't make good marathoners, no matter how much they train. I mean, you've probably seen this a few times through history. You might get someone who was a champion sprinter, or even like a certain positions in football, and they decide they're going to train for and run a marathon. Some of them don't even complete the project because the fit is so far away from their nature. But a lot of them, they run, and you would think, oh gosh, if you're really fast at the 100, the pace is so much slower in the marathon, you'd smoke that too. But unfortunately, a lot of times they're just barely finishing when they're taking down the banner and all the food's gone at the post-race party because they're that slow. Interesting. Even if a fiber doesn't convert, each of those different muscle fibers will undergo adaptations in response to training. So I think that's important, again, just to appreciate how these bodies like to adapt. With endurance training, slow twitch fibers can increase their capillary networks and aerobic enzymes. So they really get good at that. While fast twitch fibers can enhance their fatigue resistance to a small degree. So they change a little. Now, on the other hand, with resistance or speed training, those explosive properties are significantly enhanced in the fast twitch fibers. But concomitantly, the slow twitch fibers will slightly increase their contraction rate and force production ability. Now, this occurs largely through improvements in when those slow twitch fibers get a little faster, shall we say, in neural stimulation. Also, the slow twitch fibers may hypertrophy or enlarge to some degree by enhancing their water storage capacities. The message here is that if you train correctly and specifically for your unique body, the very durable and adaptable human can literally do just about anything. However, what you'll probably notice, you'll probably achieve your best performances when your fitness or athletic pursuit closely matches your true inner animal. In other words, you can make a coyote a bit more panther-like, or a bear a bit more coyote-like, but you'll never completely turn one into another. And I think that's the thing that we're trying to appreciate, embrace, celebrate in the Animal Fit book and in this system and in this series of podcasts. So now that you know about the primary muscle fiber types, and you have a genetically predetermined ratio of those fibers, which can vary slightly within some of your muscles depending upon their role, let's help you figure out what your muscle composition probably looks like. Now, fortunately, we can do this without having you to go through the inconvenience or the discomfort of a muscle biopsy. We can make a very accurate guesstimate based on how you identify with certain statements regarding each animal's muscular presentation. Our goal with this process is to help you to identify the primary type of skeletal muscle fiber that you possess and how it relates to the basic somatotype, or again, animal, in the Animal Fit Kingdom. For some folks, this is going to be quite easy because your muscles will clearly be mainly, again, respecting some of those percentages and variances of one type. But for others, you'll find, and for many others, in fact, you'll find that you have a more distinct blend of two fiber types, and you have to sort through some things that our ongoing discussions will pull out. So I'm going to get to a couple different statements here in a moment, which describe three things. A person who is dominant in one of the three muscle fiber conditions. So there's a, some statements for slow twitch, for what I'm calling blended, or for fast twitch. Your goal with this is to kind of listen to me talk about each of these sections and then choose the one that identifies you best. It doesn't have to be perfect. It's just the one you're closest to. So for anyone who's 75%+ dominant in one fiber, it's going to be easy. It's going to be clear and easy because you'll easily identify with the statements. However, many of us are more hybridized, and we may actually have percentages of fiber characteristics, slow and fast twitch, that are more blended. And then, for example, if I just use myself, I can choose my dominant characteristic as kind of being a blended muscle fiber athlete because I tend to perform near the middle in a lot of areas. And that's kind of a signal there. Just try to be honest with yourself and choose a category that seems to match you more than the others. Again, even if it doesn't seem perfect. And we're going to fine-tune these things as we go along. So, okay. For a person who may have a predominance of slow twitch muscle fibers, here's some thoughts. You ran cross country in high school. You love long bike rides, swims, and hikes. You enjoy working out at lower intensity for longer duration. You find anything endurance-oriented fairly easy, and you seem to do better comparatively amongst your peers in these activities. Strength isn't necessarily your strong suit, but if you tone resistance back a bit, you can keep going and going like the Energizer Bunny. Blasting it isn't your thing, but grinding it sure is. The longer the event lasts, the better your results. So just think about those for a minute. That's for anyone who may have a predominance of slow twitch muscle fibers. Now, a blend, and again, we were saying, 40, 60, 60, 40, those numbers aren't set in stone either. A blend of slow twitch and fast twitch muscle fibers. So now, you wrestled in high school, or you ran the 400 or 800 meters in track. If you were not a jumper, which would be another common one, you like to play soccer, basketball, tennis, hockey, or other court and field sports that have that mix of dynamic movement and recovery. You love interval training, and you seem to thrive on it. You get better results when you lift fairly heavy, but you need a little variety to keep it effective. Fitness classes, group workouts, CrossFit WADs, all those things seem to bring out your best. Sometimes you describe yourself as quick, but not truly fast, or strong, but not totally powerful. You seem to learn almost any sports skill quite rapidly, and people will often compliment you on your agility. So again, that's what we're going to call the blended athlete with respect to muscle fibers. Now, let's look at some thoughts on athletes who may have a predominance of fast twitch muscle fibers. You played football, or you were a sprinter on the track or in the pool. You love the weight room. One rep max efforts are where you shine, and you like to lift with doubles and triples, but you're not too jazzed about high reps or supersets. People always ask you for help when they need to move a refrigerator, couch, or safe. You pretty much hate jogging, cardio, or anything that isn't explosive, all out and over in a few seconds. It's easy for you to gain strength and mass. You can beat everybody up a flight of stairs if you want to, but you loathe and fear the thought of racing them up 20 flights. Okay, so that's, just some examples of someone who's very fast twitch dominant. And what I'm going to say about all that is I just want you to let that resonate. You can even play this back again if you want and just think about it. There will be a few people who will say, man, that first one, it just nailed me. I am an endurance beast. And then there are also going to be a few that, man, okay, my phone rings or however people contact you these days all the time to move refrigerators. Okay, you see where I'm going. But in a lot of you are probably going to say, I'm not sure yet. I think I might be in the blended category. And that's what we're going to be working on pulling out as we go through a few more of these discussions. So I think that was plenty to talk about today. And then in that third and final section of this muscle portion of our talks, I'll talk about some of those mechanical considerations and look at contractions and movement problem solving strategies and basically just a few simple things that you can test yourself on to see, well, which one of these ways is my body wired and how does it prefer to use the muscle fibers, and everything will become clear and telling. So probably enough from me today. Great pleasure to talk about this with you. Thanks for being here and catch you next time. Thank you for joining me today. If you enjoy the show and the messages are resonating with you, please consider subscribing and sharing this podcast with someone awesome like you. More information on the coaching services I provide is available at thelifetimeathlete.com. You can learn about my one-on-one services, our nationwide online group training community, The Training Tribe, and my book, Animal Fit, the body type assessment and training system like no other that helps you to unleash your inner beast and unlock your athletic potential. Have a fantastic day, and I'll see you next time.